Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Open Door Philanthropy Conference Special. We brought our microphones down to the Nexus U.S. Summit this year at the United States Institute of Peace. And in plain view of the Lincoln Memorial, over the course of 2 days, we conducted 10 interviews with a diverse array of conference delegates. Some of our guests, like Hank Love from the American Jobs Project, were actively fundraising. And I was able to convince Hank to submit a proposal to the unfunded list that's currently under review. Other guests, like Karen Yanis, were active funders. Karen ran Oprah Winfrey's foundation for 10 years. I was able to convince Karen to join the evaluation committee. We had a bunch of other cool folks sit down with us who were a little bit harder to find. On a personal note, this was just an absolute blast for me. I got the chance to interview some of my favorite people in a beautiful setting. We had amazing conversations. I hope you'll listen and understand that these represent just a microcosm of my own participation in Nexus over the years. I've been attending this conference for almost 9 years now. Each conversation you listen to here, whether I've just met our guest or known them for years, is reminiscent of hundreds of conversations I've had in the halls of Nexus over the years. People ask me often how I've built such an impressive network. And I can tell you that it's because of conversations like these. At the very least, I think you'll find them entertaining. Please note that these were recorded live on site in a less than ideal acoustic circumstance. You can pretty much always hear me because I'm basically Shrek. But sometimes our guests are a little bit harder to hear. We'll do our best to make transcripts available since every word of these conversations were important and interesting. But for now, I hope you enjoy. Listening to the show, we are at the Nexus U.S. Summit in the U.S. Institute of Peace, Washington, D.C. Out the window behind me is the building that houses the Lincoln Memorial, and I'm very excited to be sitting here with Christina Safran from the organization Project HEAL, who have submitted multiple proposals to the unfunded list, and most recently made the list. Currently an unfunded list. We have 5 organizations on the list. And I can name them, but I'm not going to do that now, because we're here to talk about one of them, Project HEAL. So, Christina, why don't you tell me, let's start from the beginning. Where are you from?
I am from New York, but I live in San Diego now.
San Diego. I went there when I was a kid. I saw Shamu, and I went to the Wild Animal Park, which was awesome.
That was my favorite part. It's the best place in America.
And I thought I liked, I came from Maine, and I thought I liked tacos. When I left Maine and went to San Diego, I was like, I thought I knew what a taco was.
You didn't know what a taco was.
Nope. Turns out you don't make them in the microwave. You hear that, Mom? Anyways, I can remember that first San Diegan taco. That's like the first thing that comes to my mind whenever I think of San Diego.
Well, when I think of San Diego, it was 83 degrees on Monday. Mm-hmm. I was at the beach on Sunday. So.
That sounds nice.
Very nice.
Wonderful. And you run an organization called Project HEAL.
I do.
What are they, the HEAL projects? That's my guess.
HEAL stands for Help to Eat, Accept, and Live. And we're the largest nonprofit in the U.S. delivering treatment, financing, prevention, and recovery support for people suffering from eating disorders.
Very important. That is you. The way you said that just now sounded like you've said it before. That's your standard. What about us? That's what you say when people ask
that's
you.
That's the one-liner. That's mm-hmm. our mission.
Can you say it again?
Project HEAL is the largest nonprofit delivering prevention, treatment, financing, and recovery support for people suffering from eating disorders.
Wonderful. Turnabout's fair play. The mission of the Unfunded List, my organization, is to educate the public about philanthropy, right? And there's a couple things in your one-liner there that I want to pick up on.
Yeah.
You said you are the largest nonprofit focusing on this issue. We'll come back to that in a minute. But you applied to the Unfunded List because you don't have, right? Everybody who applies to the Unfunded List does not have enough funding. Yet here you're the largest nonprofit working on this issue.
Nonprofit.
Can you sort of help me connect some of the dots? How is it possible that you're unfunded and the largest?
Yep. So largest grassroots. The reality is we're the second largest eating disorder nonprofit in the country next to the National Eating Disorder Association. We are the only grassroots chapter-based organizations. We have 40 chapters across the country. Okay. And we're the only global organization as well. So some of those chapters are international.
But they have slightly more funding?
Slightly more funding, but this is...
And they're the only one working on this issue that have more funding than...
Yes. So to give you a little sense of the scope of the problem, eating disorders affect an estimated 30 million Americans, and eating disorder nonprofits collectively in the U.S. raise less than $10 million a year. It is a very unfunded...
Fewer issue. Than $10 million a year.
Sorry.
And so that is just 33 cents for each person suffering from this problem.
Yes.
Is 33 cents enough to help them get through it?
It is most certainly not enough to help them get through it, no.
Okay. I'm not surprised. That sounds like something that you would need more money for.
Yeah. And they have the highest mortality rate of all mental illnesses. So
I'd like to get some clarity on that. This is the highest, the most fatal mental health issue.
Yes.
And we are spending...
33 cents.
33 cents per victim
yes.
of it.
Yes.
I'm not sure if victim's the right language. To
yep.
Very interesting. So one of the things that actually happens here at the Unfunded List is whenever I announce a new list, right, like there's usually groups of different sizes on there. Some of them are truly unfunded. Like we've put a couple of groups out there that have really never raised any money at all. But I was a fundraiser myself, and I know that every single nonprofit in the country needs more money than they currently have.
Yeah.
And I just want to repeat that. Like there are no funded nonprofits there's probably some nonprofits that have more money than they should have, but I guarantee you there's a development director there who thinks that they need more. And it's his opinion versus mine whether they have enough, right? But there is no one out there that's like, oh, we've got too much money and we're overfunded, right? And in the general populace, I think there can be a misconception on that. So you are on the list, and there's another group on the list, Simprints, who actually have had some funding success, as have you. You had received some grants from some people. And this is something I want to clarify for the audience because it's a question I get from folks. So Simprints has they have a grant from Gates and I think Draper, Richards, Kaplan, some pretty well-known folks. But they're trying to solve the identity crisis in refugee camps around the world. There's 200 million people in migration,
wow.
right? And every single day there's a new baby and there's no way to track who those people are. This is a very big problem,
yep.
right? We're going to need, and this is hard to believe, more money than Gates can provide to solve this problem. And this is one of many, many intractable problems. And it's very, every time I announce the list, there's a couple people who email me and they say, well, I went to their website and I got a couple about Project Heal and it was like, they look like they have partnerships and they're doing stuff. You know, why did you do this? I explain, I say, well, and in fact, I used some of the stats you just told me,
yeah.
right? Like we wanted to call attention to this issue, which was definitely one of the goals for us.
Yeah.
You have had a little bit of funding success. Talk to me a little bit about how you fundraise.
Yeah, certainly. So Project Heal started when I was 15 in my own recovery from anorexia, primarily just to raise money for people who couldn't afford treatment. Started very grassroots. I ran it throughout college. We had no staff. So while we've been in existence for 10 years, the major growth has really been in the last 3 years since I graduated.
Well, you founded as a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Did you do much fundraising as a teenager?
You know, a lot of our fundraising was sort of piecemeal. We had one event a year. We grew pretty quickly with our chapter system. We had 40 chapters before we had a single staff member. It gives you a sense of the grassroots support in this community for this cause.
I can believe it.
There was no sort of fundraising strategy behind it, coming from the fact that we had no staff. It was an all-volunteer organization run by high schoolers.
Well, I'll say, I've worked with high school-age fundraisers before, and they actually have a lot going for them that adults don't have. One, they're adorable. It's very difficult to say no to them. They don't have to work all day at their job, so they have the time
yep.
and the energy and the passion on the issue and stuff.
Yep.
And not for nothing, often their expenses are being covered by their parents or,
yep.
or guardians or whatever, and so they can be very, very effective fundraisers.
Yep.
I just want to mention that.
Yep.
Another topic I'm interested in, I'd like to hear a little bit about the chapter thing as well. One of the things we were talking about with a guest earlier, so the reason the Unfunded List exists is not just because I had the idea for it. Having the idea for it alone was not enough. The reason it exists is because I come from a family that has a little bit of money, and they put me in charge of the family foundation, and I was able to fund it myself from the beginning. In order to get a nonprofit off the ground this day and age, unfortunately, you need something like that to happen, right? And it's not true that they're only run by people like me who have their own family
Endowment Foundation first, right? One of the folks we spoke with earlier today had a very strong personal relationship with the governor of his state, who was able to open some doors, get some things happening for him as well. And there's other ways that you can, I mean, the standard way is to hustle, work harder than everybody else for nothing until you get noticed and you bring the money in,
yeah.
Which I don't think is sustainable. But chapters are grassroots chapters model is an interesting way to get a national program off the ground, especially when there is actual grassroots interest in that.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the like some of the strategic thinking in your 15-year-old mind there. How did you come up with that idea?
Actually, no. So a lot of Project Heal grew on its own very organically. The way we got chapters, we were just fundraising for treatment. People kept writing to us saying, how do we get involved? How do we get involved? We said, give us money. They said, we want to do more. We said, raise money in your own community. So that's what they did. It was just, that was how it developed, and their primary mission to date has been to fundraise for our national treatment grant. Through that, they've ended up raising a lot of awareness, educating about eating disorders, providing support to one another, but that was, there was sort of no structure behind it. Again, 3 years ago when I started doing this full time, having been in the field now for a number of years, seeing all the gaps, and having a real sense that, wow, this issue is incredibly unfunded. Nobody is working on it. You know, these are hard.
Did you, 15-year-old you, said unfunded? Because before I founded this, it was...
21-year-old me said
you said the word?
Underfunded.
Underfunded.
Underfunded. I typically say eating disorders are the most stigmatized, underfunded, underdeveloped of all mental illnesses. But that stems from them being underfunded. Absolutely. So, you know, thinking about...
The funding on Alzheimer's has to be...
Oh my
10,
God.
100 times?
It's like thousands of dollars per affected individual. And you know, I think a large part of that, I'll go on a little tangent, but...
Not that Alzheimer's isn't serious.
No, not that it's not serious, but folks really misunderstand eating disorders. They misunderstand a couple of things. One, just like the scale of it, right? 30 million Americans, you say that number kind of cavalierly, but that's 10% of the population. That's a big...
It's more people than I know.
That's a huge amount of people.
Which
right?
I know a lot of people.
I think that... Many people think that they are a vanity thing and not a real mental illness. Couldn't be
white girl disease.
The
movies
girls.
They showed me in high school, it was all rich white girls.
And frankly, that's who gets treatment right now. So it's a self-reinforcing problem. But no, they have some of the strongest genetic neurobiological underpinnings, as I mentioned, highest mortality rate, and they mostly do not affect rich, white, thin girls. They affect people of all different races, ethnicities, genders, ages, socioeconomic statuses. Most people are not underweight. That's a huge misconception right there. And so we are not adequately serving, I mean, the majority of this population effectively at all.
And certainly we should be. It seems to me that there would be, you know, there are donors in the world interested in funding mental health. There are donors in the world that might have a personal connection to this issue. They would want to fund it. And in general, there may be funders interested. Increasingly, I've been meeting funders interested in food in general and society's relationship to it and how we improve it. Are these the sort of folks that the funders that you look for? How is it that you do your fundraising? I don't mean small. I mean when you go after a big target, like who are your top prospects?
I know that the major revenue that most nonprofits generate is from major donors, right? And individuals. Individual giving still makes up a lot of it. And
it is the vast majority.
That is.
Although the number one source of revenue for the number one source of revenue for nonprofits is earned revenue.
Yes, revenue. Sorry. So
not gifts.
Money coming in. Yeah.
But in terms of gifts, it's from regular individuals. Absolutely.
And, you know, I've known this since I started. The people who care about my issue the most are always going to be the ones who are most effective. They get it immediately. I don't even have to say anything. Like, they just instinctively know how big a problem this is, how hard it is, and that our programs work and help people. The problem is finding those people because it is still such a highly stigmatized issue that nobody talks about it. 10% of the population is affected, but the number of people who have been outspoken about a personal or family history of an eating disorder, like zero. And I think that goes back to, not zero, but very, very,
I can't think
very, very few. But
I'm trying to remember
some of it.
Back
to misconceptions about it. So I've been trying to activate more of the influencers, business community. community folks like that, because when influential folks who you know and look up to come out and say, I've struggled with this, this has affected me, this has affected my family, and we need to give this attention, that's what allows other people to say, yes, me too, I'm going to come out. So I have, you know, two great examples of it. One is my board member, Parag. He is right now the chief strategy officer of the San Francisco 49ers. Lost his sister, Shilpa, to anorexia about 12 years ago. Horrible, tragic story. Top of her class, UCLA Law School. The family didn't really understand. There were no effective treatment mechanisms, and she passed away at her parents'
Horrible.
Basement. 70 pounds. Absolutely horrible. Parag didn't talk about it for so many years.
How could you? What would you say?
Saw him at this tiny event in the Bay Area, and I was like, you need to be my champion. Your story is so amazing. And I told him my whole vision for what I wanted to do in this world, getting the problem out there. And he was like, I'm so on board. Like, I'm your best person. I'm a male. I'm a minority. I'm in football. Like, yes, great. We're going to do it. And he was going to be our gala honoree last year. And when I started, you know, emailing him about helping me to sell tables, he went radio silent. And basically, we had a conversation, and this was really in our relationship. And he was like, I'm so sorry. I don't know if I'm ready to talk about this. And I totally understand if you have to find another honoree. And thankfully, I was able to talk to him and say, you know, don't worry about anything. I hope you come and share your story. It's really powerful. Since he's gotten off the stage, he's been our biggest advocate. 3 days later, the New York Times called us, said, can we do an exclusive interview with Parag about his sister? He said, yeah, for you guys, I will. So many people from the NFL community wrote to him saying, thank you so much for sharing this. This has affected me too, and like nobody talks about it, and I really care about it. And now he's one of our greatest champions, our board member, held our big gala at Levi's Stadium this year. And that's how you change the culture and get more people to talk about it. That's making funders.
Terrific. And so it sounds like, you know, you've got a pretty good head on your shoulders for fundraising and have been doing pretty well. What was it that caused you to send a proposal to the unfunded list?
Well, we need more money. The reality is...
I mean, it's funny. There's a lot of people who don't understand that. It bears repeating. Like, they need more money.
We need
if you're listening now and you're wondering how you can help by sending more money to Project Heal.
Sending more money. And
there's a link on the Unfunded List website that goes right to their donation page.
Our community
conveniently
program, the first peer support program for folks with eating disorders, takes $25,000 to start a new community of a peer support program that literally is changing people's lives. It's a low cost, but we want this program to be everywhere. We have 40 chapters right now that are screaming for it, and there are more places in the country that need it. So, yeah, that requires funding, and I think, you know, this is a longer conversation, but there is this thought and model in the nonprofit sector that, you know, you can't spend money, you can't pay folks. Frankly, when I started this at 15, it was really hard for me to transition to what's now a more successful nonprofit, because I was the thought of paying myself a salary for this was like, I'm a monster, right? But I know the feeling. Grow if I was not able to pay a salary to do this, right? And I think we're expecting our nonprofits to solve the world's greatest problems, right? And then giving them none of the tools of the for-profit sector of being able to, you know, hire and recruit good people by paying them a good salary, giving them money to invest in risky initiatives. That's one of the biggest ones. Like, this new program we're doing...
Professional development skills.
Risk, right?
Train them.
Yeah. Professional development, training.
The number of times...
Advertising and marketing, like, such a dirty world in nonprofits, but to compete with corporate America, which has...
If you have services to offer, people need to find out about those services.
Yeah.
And you're right, and you are, and they often they think that they're competing with the other service providers for attention. They're not. You're competing with Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola buys an awful lot of ads. They try to be ubiquitous in society. It's part of their goal. They don't really have asks in their ads. They just want their logo to be so many. The Bank of America is probably the best example of this. It feels like Bank of America has been around forever, right? Like, it hasn't. It was Bank of Italy like 15 years ago, right? And they put the flags up there, and they put none of their ads ever say anything. It's just Bank of America, Bank of America, you're convinced. The actual Bank of America got somebody censured and then impeached.
Yeah. No, I think...
And that is some banking history for the folks.
Another thing I think about a lot in terms of the nonprofit sector is, why is it that a CEO of Coca-Cola, for example, can make, you know, $80 million a year?
No one has a problem with it.
$1 million to charity and be considered a hero. Yet, that same smart
kid, they'll write an article about it,
who went to, you know, Stanford Business School, wants to go work and fighting childhood obesity and, God forbid, make $400,000 a year, you're a pariah. Like, how does that make any sense? And then to, you know, add to that, the main way we measure nonprofits right now is what? Overhead. How much overhead do you have spent? You know, it's, I don't care how much overhead you spend. Do you make impact? How much impact are you making? That's what we need.
I used to work at Atlas Corps, which is an administrative organization. We administer programs for other nonprofits. So almost everything that we did is overhead. If you judge us based on our overhead rate, you would think that we were just horrible monsters, right? But that's just what we did. And our doing that lowered administrative costs for everybody that we were working with. And I would have people who are otherwise business savvy, right? Like people who know how to make money in the real world, right? Then they come down and they're like, well, I don't like that at all, right? And you get the flip side too. You get also people who like don't understand how you, like, they're like, well, this doesn't look sustainable because none of you are making enough money, right? Or like, you can't possibly live in New York if that's your salary. I've heard people say, so I'm not going to give you any more money because I know you can't afford to live on, like, that. You hear stuff like that all the time as a fundraiser. It can be very, very frustrating. So you sent us a proposal. Did you like the feedback we gave you? Have we been helpful
it was
to you?
Incredibly helpful. So one of the
really?
Biggest.
You don't have to just say that because you're on the podcast.
No. Obviously, I believe in your model and I believe in your nonprofit, because one of the biggest frustrations submitting proposals is that you don't get feedback. We spend so much time crafting these proposals, so much time of time that we do not have, and then you get zero feedback. So how are you supposed to get better without feedback? Feedback is the number one learning mechanism. And so, yeah, oh my God, the fact that it's reviewed by, you know, what, eight experienced, you know, critique judges and are giving you fantastic feedback. We submitted once, got amazing feedback, tweet the proposal based on that feedback, and got on the list. And now our proposals to other organizations reflect that feedback, and hopefully we'll see. We're kind of in second round of applying for a number of grants, but hopefully we'll see some success in that as well. But yeah, I think funders need to think about, like, you're asking nonprofits to spend a significant amount of time and resources to apply for these grants, and then not giving them any feedback. And you have no idea, I think you said this to me, like, MacArthur gets how many hundreds of thousands of proposals a year, and you don't know if you were, like, not a chance, or, like, you were really close, and you just needed to tweak this sort of one thing, one idea that needs a little bit of work, and, like, apply again next year, or apply to other funders, and you're almost there.
It's tough, and it's hard. I mean, funding is hard as well. They've got a lot of proposals to read, and the people they are funding take up a lot of their time. So being able to get it, and also, when you give feedback, it's just not heard. When you're the funder yourself, it just doesn't get heard correctly. It's not a suggestion. You have to do this to get the grant, right? And so then people end up changing their program. For a variety of reasons, the foundations just sort of have stepped back from giving that feedback.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily want them to start because, you know, like I said, they don't think they'll do it well, which is why our program exists. Increasingly, we are actually involving foundations in what we work because they do want to hear about new ideas and stuff, and they like the sort of credibility that comes when I recommend that someone reads it. Also, this is something I didn't really understand when I started the program. They like the fact that you just got a lot of feedback from experts. They think that that's a sign that you might be about to improve.
Yeah.
Not for nothing. If you were to go to Deloitte, McKinsey, and pay them to do what Unfundalist does for folks, right? That'd be like a $20,000 project.
Yeah.
And if you say, hey, and that's something that that you might brag about to a funder. Say, we just finished this project with Deloitte, and here's the results from it, right? And so we try to make that, and a lot of people don't have $20,000, the unfunded particularly, don't have $20,000 to go right off to McKinsey. And quite frankly, even if they did have $20,000, I don't think they should give it to McKinsey.
Yeah. That would be not smart use of resources.
So at the end of each round, when the folks make the list, I do my best to try to connect folks with foundations, and I've done pretty well with you. We got you to talk to the Born This Way Foundation, which is Lady Gaga's foundation. I knew Maya, who runs it, from kind of a long time ago. I don't think either of us want anyone to know how long ago that was, when we were youth activists. And then also, I'm not sure if you've spoken to them yet, but the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, because Janita is one of our reviewers.
Yeah.
And every round, I add more and more program officers from more and more foundations.
Yeah.
And they love reading the stuff, giving feedback. Have you gotten a chance to speak with them yet?
We have.
Yeah,
and we're
great.
Submit a grant to them. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
The culture of health.
That's very good to hear. All right, so everybody at home, you should listen. Send us your proposals. And if it's as good as Christina's are, then we'll do our best to help. But and if it's not, then we'll tell you how to make it better. If we get some proposals in this round or in perhaps some future rounds that are, particularly if they're working with eating disorders or similar populations to you, would you be willing to take a look at those?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. That's awesome. It sounds like we are ending a session, so it's about to get noisy in here. Thanks very much for sitting down with us. Thanks for sending us proposals. Like I said, we add new evaluators each round, so if you submit again, I'll have all new folks.
Awesome.
Thanks very much, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Dave.